Fear gripped U.S. and world markets as American investment bank Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy protection. Merrill Lynch was taken over by Bank of America, and mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac came under the control of the U.S. government. An estimated $700 billion was lost to those investing in retirement plans, government pension funds, and other investment portfolios. Wall Street saw a loss of value of more than 4% on September 15th, following Lehman Brothers' collapse, the biggest crash since the September 11th attacks. Stock markets in London and Tokyo fell to their lowest levels in more than 3 years. Much of the instability can be tied to bad loans made in the subprime mortgage market. Financial analysts looking for the next domino to fall were closely watching American International Group, or AIG, after the world's largest insurer's stock fell by some 60% and losses of almost $20 billion. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with economist Max Wolf, who examines the collapse of major financial institutions, the damaged U.S. economy, and the links to deregulation policy advocated by conservative economists and politicians.
It seems to be raining banks and bankers, and when it rains, it pours, apparently, in this business. So in the last 3 months, we've seen three of the five U.S. investment banks cease to exist either at all or as independent, starting in mid-March with the demise of Bear Stearns. It has been a season of trouble on Wall Street, and I think this pain both started outside of the financial markets and has already spilled well outside the financial markets, whether that's the massive 50% approximate sell-off in Chinese shares, or the seizure in the Russian markets that shut down their market, or the rising unemployment or the rising misery of the general public here as wage growth stagnates and employment growth stagnates.
Max Wolf, how much of what we're seeing unfold on Wall Street is tied directly with deregulation policy that have been pushed by successive presidents, conservative economists, and politicians?
Part of what's changed in our deregulation is that we've deregulated both who can lend money, so it's not just the banks, what the banks can do inside each country in terms of lending money, and what banks and other firms can do in terms of international transactions. And part of what that's produced is a shift from what we used to call the originate-to-own model of lending to the originate-to-distribute model of lending. Under the originate-to-own model of lending, banks generally would make loans, and then they would enter a long-term partnership in which their prospects, their futures, and the futures of those people to whom they lent were wed, and so they would be cautious and careful, and sometimes also racist and discriminatory, but cautious and careful with who they lent money to and how much they lent and under what terms. In the age of international capital flows and deregulation, money from all over the world can zoop across international borders multiple times in a deal, and more banks and increasingly what they call non-bank financial intermediaries, which means not a regulated bank entity but someone who lends money, began the originate-to-distribute way of operating as financial firms, in which they made loans for the express purpose of selling them to someone else as fast as possible. Wall Street got in on that by securitizing these loans, which is a sort of fancy phrase for chopping them up and reformulating them into a mystery meat of different debts and then selling them around the world. And that's part of how this bubble got so big, a huge part of it, and why this bubble is so painful and so international as it busts and the shockwaves ripple out from ground zero, which is more or less the American subprime borrower. But increasingly, it affects college loans, credit card loans, auto loans, and prime home mortgage loans, as well as subprime home mortgage loans, where the trouble began.
Max Wolf, when you hear John McCain say that the fundamentals of the U.S. economy are quite strong, and you hear comments by Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama on what he would do if he were president to address these financial issues, what's your assessment of these two candidates and their prescriptions?
It looks like John McCain is doing something that sadly many in the mainstream press and an awful lot of citizens, our fellow citizens, have been doing, which is to kind of hope that this goes away by sheer force of will and pretending it's not here. And when McCain says the fundamentals are strong and he doesn't see much, you kind of wonder who he's kidding and what he thinks he's going to get out of saying that. So that is very much not hope-inspiring. When I hear it, I find it kind of shocking, and it seems a very poor electoral strategy and very strange. On the other hand, when I listen to Barack Obama talk about it, it reminds me of the worst of student oral presentations in my classes, in which you have a perfectly bright student who's clearly skimmed instead of read the material and is straining to remember the 10% of it he knew 10 minutes ago. So it does not sound like someone who's particularly knowledgeable, interested, or involved in these issues, and that's also upsetting because I expect some greater insight and possibly forward-looking solution from Senator Obama, and also because this is huge, it's here, it's now, and I have virtually no doubt that by November, when the elections roll around, the economic turmoil, the number of people in pain, the number of people in foreclosure, well above a million, is going to be the single biggest issue, and one would like to see the candidates deal with it in a much more reasonable and informed manner than either has so far.
If you were to advise these presidential candidates on how to address the current financial crisis, what are some of the top recommendations you'd make?
I would recommend that you cancel the interest payments and do small incremental reductions in the principals on the loans in an effort to safeguard the wealth, knowing full well that many people cannot and will not pay back all the interest and all the principal, and you can put the interest back on the tail end of the loan, you know, 20 years out or something, they can make their interest payments, because the people also have to feel like all their sweat and all their toil and all their tears, all they do to earn that money and stay in that house gets them some equity, because otherwise they're working really hard for a house that's declining in value to make payments, much of which are interest payments, for a house their prospects of owning outright in the foreseeable future are very dim. So I don't much think that was a particularly good idea. And I don't much like the pattern of private, untransparent dealings in which some firms are killed and other firms are rescued. And as to the Lehman deal particularly, Lehman should have been saved. Too little was done, and everybody was too smug with the idea that, oh, we don't do bailouts. But, I mean, who are you kidding? You've done 10 this year. Why not this one? Once you start in this business, you know, picking and choosing behind closed doors who lives and who dies on Sunday afternoons with the Treasury and the Federal Reserve and then announcing it as letting the market work its magic is kind of through-the-looking-glass stuff, in my opinion.
That was economist Max Wolf. Read his commentaries online at HuffingtonPost.com and GlobalMacroscope.com.